Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. Hey, Michael.
Oh, hello, Jill.
How are you today?
Sweaty.
I feel like, listeners, Michael and I are both having like hot mess moments.
Yeah, and you know, like we had a good moment where we were seeing each other in person, getting to do these things, and life seemed such a breeze. But start of school year and COVID making a not really returning, more like screaming on the top of its lungs, "I'm here" from Broadway's The Color Purple. We're doing this virtually again for now.
We are. And I just have to tell everyone what happened this morning.
I don't know this then.
No, you do.
Okay, great.
Well, it depends on whether or not you've seen your text messages. You might be clued in. We record these obviously very much ahead. It is the end of August now when we're recording this one because it's way ahead and out of order. And this morning, our late June episode dropped.
Right.
I am terrible about keeping up on the calendar and the schedule to know what's coming. I often text Michael and say, what episode is coming out this week, next week, whatever.
Well, to be fair, like, it is crazy early that we record them.
It is. So when we recorded this, I did not note the release date at all. And I was not anticipating anything weird this morning. Just so you understand the headspace, it was like way out of left field.
Absolutely.
I woke up to 5 text messages from people I know cracking up that I had told the world that I accidentally sent one of my children to camp with ringworm. Here's my favorite part. Really, I don't care either way. I have zero regrets. It's funny to me. I'll just lead with that. But people who know me, you have a rounded view of me. Yeah. This is like one small thing, and it's funny. I was asked kind of late in the game in July if I would be the PTO president at the middle school. My older kids will be their first year at the middle school. So I have been meeting all these people I don't know. This week was all of the orientation and info sessions. So I met like 700 people.
Wow.
And you know, when you meet someone new, they like ask you, what do you do? Right. And I said, oh, I co-host a podcast with my friend Michael. And so I had sent the link to a bunch of people.
Oh my gosh.
So among my texts this morning was a text from a person I've literally known for 4 days. Who was like, OMG, I'm dying. Who knew Hot Mess Mob can also be the PTO president?
Wow.
And killing I wanted to die for a minute. But, you know, welcome middle school parents. This is apparently who I am.
Apparently who I am.
Yeah.
Well done there.
Nice. So, yeah.
I honestly, like, can't relate. Parenting is hard.
But can you imagine being introduced to a new group of people as the person who's accidentally sent their child to camp with ringworm?
It does make me wonder, like, of the people who we don't know who listen to this, like, what they're thinking right now.
Mostly because I share all the embarrassing stories, they think I am the worst parent on the planet.
I'll be sure to check our info@bookabout.com email to make sure there's no like child protective services nonsense going on in there.
I'm sure if our listeners don't alert them this week, when we again talk about it a second time, I'm sure.
Sure.
I don't necessarily regret telling the story. It was and is hilarious. The timing maybe could have been slightly better.
I want to say, when I went back to edit the episode, I was listening to the story and I did think about texting you being like, are you sure you want to put this in here? But I was like, it's fine. Like, it's fine. It won't matter.
No, yeah. It's fine. And people who really know me will just be like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Run of the mill. Yeah.
And I'm not always sending my children out into the world with communicable diseases.
Just like at least once per child.
I feel like I get a pass. Once per child. This is this child's pass. Besides that, what are we doing today?
We are doing something that we are so, so excited about. And the final version of this that we've done through season two, it's our final book club chat. And we are talking all things The Gunkle by Stephen Rowley.
This book was amazing.
Like top to bottom.
It was so many things. I'm excited to share with our listeners. This being our fourth quarter book club pick came about like super organically. Normally, mm-hmm. Michael and I go searching and we try to pick a new book. So people are kind of getting, you know, maybe they're seeing something in social media and we can kind of co-market. We sometimes get a copy in advance, sometimes not. So we're kind of going on the marketing or the salespeople's recommendation to us. But this one I read. You had already wanted to read it. Mm-hmm. And I texted you, I think throughout, and was like, you have to read this. You have to read this. You have to read this. And then after you read it, we were like, we have to talk to Stephen Rowley. This book is phenomenal.
Yeah. And also, I love that it's our book club selection because, as you said, we were throughout the season, for the most part, picking front list books that hadn't even been published yet. I think because we so desperately want to celebrate authors and support them. Yeah. And in our minds, we were like, we want to get on top of it. We want to get our listeners, this book in the ear of our listeners so they know to go buy it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad we did that. And we'll continue to talk about books on the podcast that are front list that we love and recommend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that accidentally, I wasn't thinking about the thing that I've been saying for 2 years, which is like books deserve a longer shelf life.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that we picked a book that had been out for a little while for this book club. And I think that we're going to continue doing that into season three.
Yeah, it was. I feel like we got caught up in the marketing swoosh and ignored our own inner compass.
Yes.
But it's so hard because the other thing is we love supporting authors and they reach out, you know, the authors, the publishers, whoever, they reach out with the titles and you want to help new authors, especially. We spend a lot of time talking to BIPOC authors, you know, gay, lesbian, everybody from the LGBTQ+ community. And we want to definitely highlight those. But I don't know. I'm just looking forward to this kind of informing how we go forward.
Me too.
Because it just speaks to our let's love all the books all the time.
All the time, exactly.
And honestly, most authors are going to either be willing to talk to us or not, regardless of whether it's the first day or the 400th day.
I actually think they'll be more willing and want to talk to us after the 400th day because I have to imagine that it's like exhausting by the end of it to have been like promoting a book, talking endlessly about the same themes and talking points. And then it peters out and then it maybe feels like people are less interested. What I think is happening is people are busy reading that book.
Yeah.
And I think that I would be really anxious and eager to talk to somebody months after my book came out, a year after my book came out, whatever. Because we spend a lot of time interviewing authors who don't even have anything coming out. We just want to talk to them about their craft.
Absolutely. So I'm excited. I think that Michael and I talked about it, and we think that'll be more of our plan going into season three. And we're excited to kind of kick that theme off with The Gunkle.
Yeah. So why don't you give our listeners a brief synopsis of The Gunkle?
Absolutely. This is Stephen Rowley's third novel. We meet Patrick O'Hara. He is a former sitcom star, complete with like a catchphrase, and he's recognized wherever he goes. His show wrapped, I think about 4 years from where we are in the novel when it opens, and he moved to Palm Springs and has lived lived kind of a secluded life. His sister-in-law, Sarah, dies after being ill for 3 years. And Sarah is his sister-in-law, but she's also was his best friend in college before she married Patrick's brother, Greg. Mm-hmm. At the funeral, Greg reveals that he was stealing and addicted to Sarah's painkillers, and he asks Patrick if he will take the kids for the summer while he goes to rehab. At first, Patrick is like, no, children are not compatible with my lifestyle. And after, like, you know, some cute moments of connection, they agree on the visit, and he says, yeah, I can do that. Let's go.
Also, it's interesting to note that Sarah, his best friend, dies before the book even begins.
Yes.
In a lot of ways is the unofficial starting point.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting because she's such a huge presence in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Without ever, I don't know how to say this, without being alive.
Yes, in the present story. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's only there through flashback.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me your thoughts really quickly. Uh-huh. What's your rating? What were you thinking going into it? And what did you get?
I was expecting to enjoy it. I loved the cover. I read the synopsis. It sounded fun and interesting. On the front cover, Patrick is shown wearing a caftan, and I have a secret, deep down desire to spend all of my days in caftans and be like Mrs. Roper on Three's Company.
Perfect.
I want to dress like that 24/7. I feel like I can't wait for people to hear this fresh off the ringworm story.
Yes.
I was absolutely blown away. It exceeded my expectations. It's 5 stars out of 5 for me. It's in my top 5 for the year, and it's getting real crowded up there.
Oh, same. Super crowded.
Yeah. How about you?
Going into it, I also expected to be entertained. Mm-hmm. The cover is entertaining and so pretty and mid-century modern. And I also went into it thinking I knew what I was expecting, knew what I was about to read. Not being a bad thing, just in a good way. Like, you know what? I need a book that is not going to be too complicated. And I have a general idea of where I think it's going.
Mm-hmm.
What a lovely surprise that it was such a surprise. And yeah, that I was wrong about where it was going, and that it was so funny and so touching and dialed into, I think, what I think is my favorite thing in fiction, which is just really thoughtful characterization. Everyone felt individual and unique, and I very eagerly give this 5 stars and think it's truly one of the best books I've read this year. And I think it does. People have a really hard time with the idea of the genre, the dramedy.
Yeah.
A lot of times I read reviews for like movies or TV shows where like, well, you know, tonally it was kind of like a little bit sad and a little bit funny. Like, I don't really know. It just, I didn't get it. I was like, that's called life. Life is a dramedy. I love the dramedy. And I loved The Gunkle.
I really did too. In our next episode that will air, Michael and I get to talk to Stephen Rowley and interview him about the book and other things. And it was really hard to know where to steer the conversation because we Right. had like 45 minutes, but I wanted to talk about everything.
Everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And I feel like it's funny because we prepare for those and then we ask like 4 of the questions that we planned, and then we just spend the rest of it like gushing and asking if we can like come and hang out and invite ourselves to wherever they are.
Yes. One of the really cool aspects of the setting of this book is Patrick's pool, and yes, it's got features heavily in the plot, and it's got all of these really cool floats. He's got like a giant slice of pizza. There's a pineapple. Right. Apparently, Stephen Rowley does, in fact, have a pool with floats. And you should listen next week. Michael and I invited ourselves over to exactly. float on them.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm headed to Palm Springs soon. Yeah. It's hard to know where to start. But let's start with I think one of the biggest aspects that I enjoyed about the book is like the witty banter. Let's start there. I loved there are all these TV, movie, pop culture, old Hollywood references, and I loved them all and would like more.
Same. And I think that like that immediately told me I was going to like this book, because if dialogue doesn't feel authentic and real, I'm probably going to DNF it, because it's really, I think more than anything, obvious when a character doesn't sound like a real person. And I've roasted a couple of books on this podcast before that I think the dialogue is absolute garbage. I'm not going to go there. We are here for the gunkle. And he killed it. I mean, his dialogue, it's very dialogue driven, the book is. And so I think that like, I mean, of course he had to nail it then. I love it. And I love that it starts with the prologue is, starts near, I want to say like 6 weeks into the kids being there.
Yeah.
And the prologue is very dialogue heavy. Mm-hmm. And they each have their own way of speaking. I mean, even the youngest has a lisp. And Maisie is very clever and sarcastic. And so is Patrick. And I got their voices immediately. And I immediately could picture what they looked like and how they were with one another. So beyond, like, even beyond the witty, like, pop culture references, like, the way they spoke was so well done.
Yeah. And that prologue really set it up so that you got a feel for the characters. You knew their voices and their relationship before you plunged into the rest of the story, which was genius. I don't, people might disagree with this, but here's, this is my hot take. Nailing kid dialogue is something we talk about obsessively here. It's hard. And I think that's why it comes up so much.
Sure.
When you are a kidlit writer, I think you live in that headspace more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you fail less often.
Mm.
I think it's just harder for adult authors.
Sure.
And not only did he nail it in the Gunkle, but it like surpasses, it's just amazing. And it's the perfect balance of Patrick talks to Maisie and Grant as if they were grownups, because he doesn't have experience talking to kids. And that's 1,000% true. I love when like people who aren't sure how to engage with children talk to my kids. It's like so entertaining. It's this perfect balance of them taking his sayings quite literally because they're kids and that's developmentally appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick also like never dumbs down what he has to say or what he wants to express. And kids are so capable. I love that they were treated that way in this book while still reflecting that there really are kids.
Especially in contrast to Patrick's sister's approach, had she decided instead to take them while Greg was in rehab. Let's talk about that relationship a little bit, because I think that family dynamics are really fascinating and interesting, especially among siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is so true. Like, she pops in and has a completely different attitude about the best way to move forward with them.
Yeah. And it's very interesting. And, you know, we learn later, I don't feel like this is a huge spoiler or anything, but we learn later that it was Sarah's idea for the kids to spend more time with Patrick after she passed.
Yeah.
I think it's because she saw Patrick as being most like her.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, so it was a way for her to live on with her children through their friendship and the stories about her. But also it somewhat removed that weird siblingness that can happen. When hard things happen, siblings can react differently, but it feels like you bring to the table every disagreement you ever had with your sibling your whole life and it explodes. So that aspect of it was really interesting to me.
Yeah, I do. And I just love the addition of his sister Clara, because I think that, and I think Patrick even admits this, I think she has her heart in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great example of like what is happening in the book. The plot and the story is one thing. And then everything that is sort of encompassing it, which is like a person's life that is still happening outside of like the plot part, is going to impact the plot. And so having an understanding of Patrick's relationship with Clara, not just in with regards to like what's happening right now, but also like growing up, they have a huge age difference and they're just very different people. Then this thing happens where they're being asked to step up to the plate. It is just like really indicative of their characters, not just their responses to it, but what other people see in them as what's the best, the right decision for the kids. But I do think that it was really hard to read. I mean, I think that Clara was someone who was really hard to root for a lot of the time. And I found myself understanding Patrick's explosions towards her while also wishing like, oh, buddy, like there was a better way to say that. And it coming too late, like when they were finally able to like sit down and talk, he was very delicate with her after having been very stern with her.
Yeah.
I like mourned their relationship.
That also was so reflective of his personal growth that happened throughout the book.
That moment, yes.
Because that moment could not have occurred before this summer.
Totally. And everything that happened, which is like the worst thing about grief is the unfortunate growth that comes after it. You know, like you didn't want this to happen, but you're a changed person because of it.
Yeah. While we're talking about family, I think we should talk about found family. Patrick has a really amazing and supportive found family in Palm Springs, mostly in the form of the hilarious thruple that lives next door.
Love them.
It's amazing because, you know, we talked about character development a bit earlier, and the thruple they're not huge major players in the action of this book. And yet, even as kind of side characters, they're hugely developed.
Fully fledged.
Charming, but you also see the complications in their relationships with each other.
Yeah.
And just fascinating. But they are, for the most part, Patrick's only family in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. And he initially, I think, doesn't even necessarily realize that's the case.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love depictions of chosen family. And I think most anyone is capable of having one. I think that it's prevalent and huge and important, specifically in the LGBTQ+ community. And Josh, my husband, and I talk about it all the time, how our friends are our chosen family. And spending time with them feels really different than before we came out and our friends then, because it really does feel like a bond, a connection that like will be forever. It's something that I think is hard. Well, I don't know. I was going to say maybe it's hard to describe and depict, because it's like the difference between describing a friendship and a family relationship. Mm-hmm. But when you just decide they're one and the same, like it's much easier for the reader to see like, oh, these people are your chosen family.
Do you think that it sometimes feels hard to depict when you are with your chosen family? You met those people as adults and as the authentic, more authentic version of yourself than you maybe were growing up with your siblings or your parents. And so those people accept the current version of you wholeheartedly because that's the only you they know.
Right.
And you don't have like all this
baggage.
Sibling baggage from growing up and pinching one another in the car.
Sure. Though I do that to my chosen family. Well, and I want to say, I think you're absolutely right. And I am very close with my actual family. Mm-hmm. And they were like very loving and supportive of me when I came out. You aren't wrong, though. I think that, especially in with regards to like my friendships before I came out and my friendships after I came out, I think that you're exactly right. Like the friends that I hold most dear to me now as an adult are people who I didn't have to come out to. So they weren't people who I had to worry, are they going to accept me as who I am? Like accept me, not tolerate me, accept me. I have very like visceral memories of meeting who are my best friends for the first time and being very worried about it. living out for a few years and finally meeting and making new friends and being really nervous to like it come up in conversation, like my sexual orientation, and then it finally happening and it being better than I could have expected.
Yeah.
It's Josh and I talk about this all the time, actually. Like, I think especially with just LGBTQ plus friends, we're at sort of a same level playing field where like we each had a very similar secret for most of our lives. Mm-hmm. And now we don't. And we have that shared experience that is different for all of us, but bonds us, like I said, like probably forever.
Oh, wow. It seems silly to say that I hadn't really ever thought of that before, but of course, having a similar experience always bonds people. But you're right. You all kind of share a similar secret. I am noticing a blind spot to having realized something that was super obvious.
No, it's okay.
I'm so glad that you shared that.
And I'm speaking from my experience, like,
yes.
Which is,
Michael,
you know, I'm speaking
speak
for all queer people.
On behalf of all the LGBTQ plus yes. community.
I love to do that. I did see this tweet once that was like, gay people had to keep one secret their whole lives, and then after they told that secret, could never keep another secret again. And that is my whole life. Like, don't tell me anything because I'm a goss.
I love that. I love that. In the Gungle, Patrick's relationship with all three men next door is helpful to his journey at various points and in different ways.
Yeah.
And I love how they are kind of a stand-in, not a stand-in, they're his family there, and they play that role so well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I found myself just like wanting a whole book about them. They were so nicely developed and seemed so interesting.
Oh, did we ask him? We've been getting into the habit of asking like what character could have taken over the whole book? Like what was the most interesting character to you? Did we ask him that?
I can't remember.
Well, we'll find out in our next episode.
In our next episode. I think we did tell him that we wanted a sequel with just the throuple.
I can't remember, but if not, like, there is a story there.
There is. Yeah. It's so well done. In addition, like all the details in the book are just nailed. I was laughing the whole time, and my husband was like, "What is so funny to you? Like, what are you reading?" And I was explaining, I said, "Oh, there's this guy, and he's like never had kids before, but he does know it's important to put sunscreen on them."
Yes.
And I said, they don't say it in the book. He just refers to it as this white stuff. So it's mineral-based sunscreen, which is, I feel like, not speaking on behalf of all parents, I feel like is harder to apply than regular, quote unquote, regular sunscreen. Like it doesn't smooth out as well and it leaves this chalky residue. And in addition to that, the smaller kids are, just the more they resist it. And so you are like literally in a wrestling match with a small person. And you both end up covered in horrible mineral sunscreen. And you hate it. I mean, Mark and I used to do paper, rock, scissors. Loser
no
has
way.
To put on the sunscreen.
Wow. This is a very specific detail.
It is. And so, and it was used as a marker throughout the book. Like it went from, he was specifically talking about it and telling other people what a struggle it was. And then he was gaining confidence with it and
yes.
would then be like, I feel like I'm starting to get this sunscreen thing under control. And then when he said, I have nailed applying sunscreen, I totally got it. I was like, you feel like a surrogate parent. You're confident in your skills and you are invested in these kids' lives because you have figured out the goddamn sunscreen.
I love that you're saying that because, like, you've shared that a little bit with me. I didn't know the details there. It just makes me feel really like, God, Steve Rowley is just, like, a guru. I just, like, can't yes. believe he was able to – I mean, I can believe, but I'm very thankful that he was able to dial in so minutely into that specific parenting experience. And I was laughing a lot throughout the book, but I was also, like, full like ugly sobs crying, not like sad sobs, but just like I'm very touched sobs. And I texted her at one point, what did I say? I said, I go from cackling to crying in 30 seconds or less. It's the Fast and Furious of dramedy fiction. And that's the truth.
That's the part that I think makes the book so unexpectedly delightful.
Mm-hmm.
You know that there's an element of grief going into it. Sarah is dead in the prologue. But you don't expect something that is as funny as this is to also so explore grief really thoughtfully and full of heart and delicately and do it so well.
I'm glad you're bringing grief back up because it's beyond Sarah, right?
Yeah.
The grief is he lost his partner in a really traumatic way that has altered his life. And Sarah was there for him when it happened. So a great example of like the back and forth of funny and sad in this book, there's a section that is written in letter form that went in the past when his partner was killed, his therapist suggested he write a letter to him in the present. And it is, it was so emotional. I just got chills thinking about it. It was so emotional in a way that like really felt real and left me feeling really raw afterwards because I just kept thinking like, I don't know how Patrick is doing it. Like I don't know how he's okay. And he wasn't. And it is a really great example of like not being okay is okay. Like that sounds ridiculous, but
no, it was, I agree.
Yeah, so I think grief in this book is multi-layered, and how people experience grief is also multi-layered.
Yeah, it is definitely, the grief journey is definitely something that Patrick and the kids are walking side by side, both in grieving Sarah/their mother, and Patrick also grieving his partner, and figuring out, they're all trying to figure out, how do I go on?
Yeah.
While also keeping these people with me, but not having their loss dictate my life.
And it takes him years. It takes him having them to come out of the fog a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about the plot twist in the least spoilier way that we can.
Well, I think we can, you know, this is a book club. We've given y'all some time to read it. The book's been out for a couple months. If it gets too spoilerly, tough titties.
I love it. Just pause here, read the book, and then come back.
Yes. Or fast forward a couple minutes, and then we'll be past it.
I hope that's true. So one of the things that we talked to Stephen about, and you and I talked about with each other, is you think you know how the book is going to wrap, and you feel like you're on a fairly, you know, straight line on the graph progression towards getting there. And even though you feel like that's going to be the ending, you're actually okay with it because if it had ended that way, it still would be an amazing book.
Right.
And then it doesn't go that way.
Right.
And that is even more amazing. So, were you surprised when Patrick did not leave Palm Springs and immediately head to the East Coast with the kids?
Yes. And not because it's surprising. It's because I was being the wrong reader. Like, I had given up on Patrick accidentally. Like, I had made this story the kid's story, and it's always Patrick's story.
Yeah.
And so reading it, like you said, like I got to a point where I was like, yeah, when they're ready to go back home, like they're going to be at the airport. It's going to be dramatic and emotional. And he's going to decide to go with them at the last minute. And we were leading up to the airport. And I was like, sweet, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Why are there so many pages left?
Why is there like 80 pages left? And then it didn't happen. And I think I was so refreshed by that because it informed my reading habits. It made me a better reader. And it reminded me that this is Patrick's story and his story isn't over. He has things he still has to do. I think it made a lot more sense, of course, the way it ended than it being kind of just like suddenly about the kids. And that ultimately is like part of why I loved this book is because it exceeded my expectations without me even knowing I had them.
Yeah, I think it would have been totally believable for him to go with the kids back to the East Coast. They form this bond without resolving any of his family crap. People do it all the time.
All the time.
But by not going, it afforded the opportunity for him to come to terms with his partner's loss, with where he wanted to go with his future, what he wanted to do with his career, where he wanted to live. It made so much healing and growth possible that for a split second, you're like, wait, what? And then you're like, no, he can't not be involved with the kids. Like, what was the point of this? And then you're like, I, just like you said, I had it wrong all along. This is Patrick's journey.
And like, not in a way that it was misleading me. It was my fault. Like, I was like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I like that, again, like his growth was so subtle, but there, because, you know, he has this meeting with some execs who want to possibly bring him back to television. And he really loves the idea of it. Some of it because it was going to be in New York, so he'd be a lot closer to them. And then the more they were talking, that wasn't going to be true. It was going to be in LA. And you can just sense that he's feeling like, I'm just getting back into old habits. Like, I'm not moving forward in any real way. But that's never very explicit. Like, we just get to decide that because we now know who Patrick is. And he's shown us who he is. So that what he ultimately decides to do is, one, like, taking back his future and his career. What made everything I read so much more satisfying. Because he had an agent he finally loved and who was working with him, and it worked out in a way that, like, his life continues after the last page turns, and it feels that way.
Okay, so here is the one part of the book that bugged me a tiny bit. I can't decide how I feel about it.
Oh my gosh.
The introduction of a new crush / possible relationship for Patrick. How did you feel about it?
The guy Patrick starts to sort of date, I saw as like the bridge between his past and his future.
Oh.
And so I wasn't that worried about, also I was like, please don't, like, this kid, he's like 22, he was so young.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that, no shame. But it just didn't seem like a real like match in the long term. So I saw him as being someone that Patrick, he had the optimism that Patrick needed for his career. He was like, this guy's going to be on stage. This guy's, you know. And yeah. I think that in those terms, I was like, almost like he acted almost like a guardian angel in that way. That was just like kind of there and then left when it was no longer needed.
That's a really interesting, I like that take on it. I sort of felt like it came out of left field.
Sure, sure.
Like, here's this person who has spent so long having this solitary life. And then I was like, well, no, but he's starting his growth journey and he's...
Right.
So this is like one aspect of that, and he's able to open himself up, and he wasn't before, and this is how part of how we're seeing that. And then I was like, oh, but this is so like a, you know, May-December thing, and like...
Right.
Is that the right choice right now? And I got caught up in that, but I love your take on it as a bridge. I hadn't thought of that. And that ties it in for me and makes it make more sense. Cause it was just kind of, when I read it initially, I was just kind of like, I don't understand what this character is doing and what this aspect of the plot is supposed to make me understand. Sure. So thank you for explaining
that to me. That's what book club's all about.
Book club. Yeah. I did not get that, but you're right.
Well, but I think that it is natural, truly, for this is, I love the way you say that. This is like a growth journey book. Mm-hmm. We start when his growth is beginning. And so like for a character to kind of to pop in for a very specific reason can feel kind of like awkward and unusual and not really going anywhere, quote unquote. I understand absolutely, like, okay, so what was the point of that and why are they doing this? By the way, May, December, it's always okay to have a quick little May, December romance.
Yes, I think it was definitely a moment of me imposing my thoughts about, I don't even,
I'm glad you bring it up because
yeah,
there's a few times when that happens, like either to like wrap up a feeling about someone in general, like his former agent was a terrible person and he never was offered the opportunity to tell him that. We just get to see the catharsis and that was amazing. You know what I mean? Like I was like really happy for him and glad that that was it. Like that, like he just got to say his piece and move on and have a new agent. So I think a version of that is hard for us is one where it feels like a budding romantic relationship and then it not necessarily lead to anything permanent, but it offered the same healing for him. You know what I mean?
I do. I think it was my desire for him to have like his happily ever after and yes. like tie this up with a neat bow and not thinking, one, that's not how life works. And two, everyone has different goals and reasons for dating different sure, people. And right. not every relationship has to be, is this person the one?
Relationship.
Totally, I was bringing yes. that to it. It was never being that.
Especially after like what he went through.
Like, right. Like it just yeah. makes sense.
He's just like going to really quickly move on and forget about him. And
you know, in the Hallmark movie of his life, that's what would happen.
Absolutely.
Last thing I wanted to talk about for this episode, I mentioned to you, and I think I mentioned it on social media as I was reading it, that I felt like this book would make the perfect adaptation.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Even though I realized this is not what happened, I feel like I manifested that into the world.
You did.
And the day we went to interview him, I was just kind of Googling and reading some background information when I saw that it has been optioned for a movie, which is, of course, the beginning of a long process of something that may or may not be a movie. But let's assume this gets made okay. into a movie, and we did get to talk about it a little bit with Stephen Rowley. Let's cast the movie. Who do you want to see as Patrick?
God, this is so hard.
It
is. This is so hard. I see Patrick generally as like a... This is a good thing from my mouth. Like, this might be controversial, but I'm okay with this. Patrick is kind of like the Kathy Griffin gaze to me.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
So I'm trying to think of like an actor that is like working, that is of that era, that is like kind of a little bit fabulous, loves Hollywood glamour, and no one comes to mind, but I know that I'm right.
It's super hard. And this whole thing came about because one of our listeners, shout out to Mallory, sent us a DM after I posted about it on social. And she said she wants it to be a movie with George Hahn as Patrick. And I said that I was hoping for it to be a movie about three chapters in. And my first pick was Zachary Quinto. I don't know that he has that over the top, like Nathan Lane type quality.
Yes. Or even just like the.
But he's wisdom. An amazing actor. I bet he could.
He is an amazing actor. So I have no fucking idea. This was a great conversation. I'm trying to think of any of the other characters too. Well, also, I think Stephen would play an incredible Patrick. Like, I think that, like.
Yes.
After talking to him, I'm just like, you are so clever. You are so sharp. You make everyone feel very comfortable right away. Like, uh-huh. I felt very comfortable with him, which is, I think, a really special thing about some people. I'm petitioning to have him be the main character.
I love that. I listened to the book on audio, and this was, we talk about it a little in next week's episode. He talks about how this was his first experience narrating his own right. book, and he had to audition to be the narrator.
Which is amazing, and I also, like, I'm glad that he had such a good time doing it. It sounds like he loved doing it. Because if I was made to like sit in a dark room for hours on end reading my own work, I think I would jump off a building.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I just thought of it from the perspective of like getting to be the audiobook narrator. Like, that's my right. dream. Like, I can sit and just read. Obviously, it's harder than this. I can sit in a quiet space and read aloud. Like, that sounds amazing, but you're right. It's your own work. And I mean, yeah, oh, like, no thanks.
And reading aloud. Like, we've discussed this. I hate having to like give synopses. I hate reading my own stuff. Like, the minute I like, should I ever be lucky enough to get published? Like, it doesn't exist anymore to me. Like, other people read it. I'm going to pay an actor to pretend to be me to go to readings. I'll pay Steven. Steven will be me.
I love everything about this. Everything. As I was reading this, the character of Maisie immediately kind of reminded me of Jenna Malone. She was in Stepmom and yes. The Hunger Games and other things.
Wow.
But I remember her being in Stepmom and just kind of having that like 9-year-old know-it-all voice.
At 9 would have been perfect.
Right? Like back in time, Jenna Malone as Maisie.
I love her, actually.
I do too.
Yeah, she did a movie in Cincinnati about libraries a couple years ago.
I'm embarrassed to say I haven't seen that movie yet, but I didn't realize she was in it.
Yeah, most people haven't. It didn't do it very well.
Oh, it was such a big deal here in town, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Cincinnati listener, like, you know that everything's a big deal here.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, like one time, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were like driving through my hometown to get to somewhere else, and the entire town went to the bridge to watch the limousine drive by. And my friend Mallory, the listener Mallory, brought a disposable camera and took a picture of the limo.
I wish we could get a picture of it to like put on our social to go with this episode. That's amazing.
I'll see if she still has it.
I love it. Totally fun. So we were talking about taking this aspect of the conversation over to social. So be on the lookout. Think about who you would cast in this role, because we want to assemble the dream cast on our Instagram.
Yes, we want to get a credit in the movie for having created the cast. As Jill said, go follow us on social media. We're at Instagram at BookItPod, Twitter at BookItPod, TikTok at BookItPod. You can find all of the books we talk about on this podcast at our bookshop affiliate link, bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod, and visit us online at BookItPod.com.
This was really fun, Michael.
So fun that I like immediately want to reread this book. So I'm going to go do that.
Oh, see you later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragasey and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.